Don't you love the hairstyle? Well, I have to play something Swedish, and Europe is one of those that we're still proud of, even though they're like old now and they don't look that way anymore. It's kind of funny. I was speaking at TechEd a couple of weeks ago in the US. And I'm just small talking because we haven't started yet, just you know. The guy's coming in here. This is actually some wireless sniffing we did at TechEd US. And I mean, we showed this a lot of times before. It's clear text passwords going on. The fun thing is that I actually found the username and password of one of the presenters in the security track. That's pretty funny. Had to send him an email from his mail account. So, it's kind of, if you look at it, some of them are really good. The second one in the top is actually using passphrases. The first one he could think of. It's complex too, pretty nice. Another one is, I don't know what language that is, but TCP Verona 4 something. So that's going to be very complex next time when we go to TCP version 6 or IP version 6. I wonder what's going to come up with then. South Headquarter Munich 1 something. Maybe that guy's here too. We had a competition actually. If they could find their name there, if they could say their name, we gave them a chocolate bar. Like, we have it already. We can verify that it's actually you. So if you want the prize, you can go get it. The teacher, we actually gave him a smart card and a smart card device so he could improve his security skills, if you will. 3 more minutes. This is the last chance for the guys sitting already to step forward and get some of those great seats in the front. We have good seats over here in the middle. You will appreciate the session more if you sit closer, because there's going to be a lot of command line stuff that you won't be able to see very well in the back. So it's perfectly okay to stand up, step forward. We also have great seats over there. So go for it. Take them. Can you please turn up the music a little bit? I think it's kind of lame. You have this low level of sound. I'm just messing with you, but it would be nice though. Is this turned up?
インターネットは安全ですか？今こそ Think Security。 マイクロソフトがお手伝いします。
Isn't it beautiful? It's beautiful. I show that to my daughter. She understands. She doesn't want to go near the computer anymore. She thinks someone's going to drag her in. You know, do you like love Mark Rusinovich in a non-gay fashion kind of way? Yes or no? Yeah, I do too. It's kind of strange, you know. I used his tools all my life, read his books and stuff, so I think I have to promote his new book, just to humor him.
is the bullet. Everyone is the target. Trojan Horse, a new techno thriller by Mark Rusinovich.
Maybe she should have skipped the last voice in the end, right? Kind of cheesy. Mark Rusinovich. I'm still going to buy the book, though. If you don't give it to me, I'm going to... Now he has to, because I promoted it to like 500 people, so... Smart move. So... I'm going to wait 3 more seconds until you guys in the back sit down. The newcomers. Two, one, a half, a quarter, an eighth. Okay, good morning, guys. Welcome to this session. I have to say, it's really rewarding. When you have the first session the last day, you don't really expect many people. It was probably a big party night yesterday. So see so many people in the room, thank you so much. It made it worth it. I flew in from the States 2 days ago, and I'm going to fly back tomorrow. So thank you so much for coming. This is my only session this week. I was in the panel, but a large tech at one session. So if I had 10 persons in the room, I would like cry. So thank you. You are the few people that realize the importance of this session. This session is the awareness session of advanced persistent threat. And it's kind of a different session in some ways. We're not going to do any PowerPoint slides. Are you like PowerPoint fans? No? Me neither. So I'm not going to use one single slide. Just to see if, I don't know if I annoy someone at Microsoft, but no slides. So if you never met me before, my name is Marcus Murray. I'm based in Stockholm, but I work all over the world. I run a security team of people doing penetration testing, security assessments, reverse engineering, tools creation, and different stuff. I am the security manager, so I get to see a lot of things. Right now I'm involved with a very interesting project. I work with an American company. They're in the military industry, and they are actually producing something called the Cyber Range. It's interesting because they are usually the kind of company who sell crypto devices for soldiers in the field and satellite components for military satellites, stuff like that. But they are turning into cybersecurity because they know that the government will pay money for cybersecurity tools. So a cyber range is basically like a firing range. If you want to train soldiers in shooting the gun, you need to go to the firing range. If you want to train cyber warfare, you need to go to the cyber range platform. So I'm part of building a cyber range platform. And that really makes me understand what's going on in the world. Countries are preparing for cyber warfare. There's actually a war going on right now between some Middle Eastern countries and some countries out in the West. But it's a change that we need to understand. And my goal in this session is to make you understand what's out there. I'm not going to go into depth of telling you everything about each and every advanced persistent threat that is out there, because there are many good white papers. I will refer to them in the end. What I want to do in this session is I want to show you some of the techniques used to show you how accessible they are, what they can do, so that you can map that into your own environment, your IT environment, and realize that maybe we should care about this, or maybe we shouldn't. But if you have the insight and the knowledge, you will have an easier way of deciding whether or not you should care. So this is an awareness session. If I can scare you a little bit, then my goal is achieved for today. If you're laughing while I'm doing it, that would be even better. So I don't want you to be too scared. Also, since this is not a PowerPoint, there is no PowerPoint for download, but you can go to my site, truesecurity.se. That is not a corporate site, this is a blog. The only thing that's on the blog are actually the presentation, the notes from this session. So you don't have to take notes if you don't want. You can download everything. It's there already for you to grab. So that's the backlash with when you don't have PowerPoints. I'm countermeasuring by bringing you the slides. So everything will be there that I show you. So just go get it now or later. But that's the only note you need to make, www.truesecurity.se. That's where you find the notes. I'm not promoting the blog itself. There's nothing in there but slides, basically. I blog too little. So we need to start with some theory just so you know what we're talking about here. APT by definition. What is an APT? It was originally used by the military, and the definition is down there. It usually refers to a group such as a foreign government with both the capability and the intent to persistently and effectively target a specific entity. Sounds pretty cool, doesn't it? The definition has been hijacked by security companies. I think today you hear about APTs all the time. As a matter of fact, I mean, we do incident response and stuff. If any company gets hacked by anything, even though it's a 14-year-old kid behind it, it's going to be an APT because it gets them off the hook. Well, we didn't have bad security. It was an APT. What could we do? It wasn't our fault. It was their fault. So I'm not saying it's really bad, but when we read the papers, we need to understand that it's not necessarily an APT because it says so in the papers. Most of them are targeted attacks. But what characterizes an APT is the fact that it is advanced. That's the A in APT. The attackers will have different tools. They will have the ability to get new tools or develop their own custom tools whenever they need to. That is not script kiddies. It's persistent. They have time and money to stay on the target for a long time. They can actually do reconnaissance for maybe years before they do the real attack. And having something like that against you, it's pretty tough. When somebody probes you for years to find your weak spots and then attack. And it's a threat since they have the capability and intent. And it's not just some kind of malware running around. The attacks will be coordinated by humans. There will actually be operators sitting there taking orders so that they can do the attack in the best possible way. So one more thing you need to understand in order to understand an APT is to understand the process of how an APT is performed. And that process is pretty complex. So I'm just going to give you a simplified process by talking about, as a starter, exactly how the RSA attack was performed. If you don't know about the attack, I'm going to explain it. And this is maybe not an APT by itself, because RSA, how many of you are aware of the RSA attack? Just raise your hand so I know. Half the audience. The rest might be sleeping or they don't know. So, you know, RSA are giving out these tokens for single sign-on solutions, or that has a password that changes every minute. So it's kind of a secure platform. The RSA attack was an attack where they actually stole data so that they could reproduce every password with the right timing of every RSA token out there. So they actually compromised their entire RSA infrastructure when it comes to the security platform. And the only thing they did was a targeted attack. The reason this is an APT is because it's suspected that it was part of an APT. Because the assumption is that there was a targeted advanced persistent attack towards two American companies, Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman, which are military industry contractors. And the assumption is that they weren't successful. They couldn't get through because they protected themselves from RSA tokens. So then they had to pause the attack, hack RSA, get the token secrets, and then go back to attack Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman. That's an APT. If you get stuck, you need to get the right data, the right tools, so you can continue. So this is a part of an APT. So let's walk through the RSA attack process. The attack actually started with a phishing attack, a zero-day attack. And a phishing attack is basically something, you attack users and you send them emails. And I'm going to prove to you later that this is actually the most common start of APTs today and all targeted attacks. So what they did was, I mean, it's kind of hard. The objective was to start the attack by getting access to some kind of client. So they sent them an email. And even though you don't know where the client is, because of email infrastructure, they sent a mail to the mail server. It was probably forwarded to an internal server. The client grabbed the email, got it into the mailbox. And this is how it works. You take the email. And then, well, the email actually looked like this. This is the email. I'm actually going to move it to front. I'm not going to move it to front because something... Anyhow. Well, it's kind of funny because at RSA, you expect them to have pretty good security, don't you? Such an important company. They actually had that. The email ended up in the spam filter. But it said recruitment plan 2011 something. So one of the employees, he was really interested in the recruitment plans. He wants to know who's going to be his new associates and stuff like that. So he went into the spam folder and he opened it anyway. It's kind of normal, at least at RSA. So what happened was, when he opened this, he double-clicked the attachment, which was an Excel spreadsheet, and it opened up. I love OneNote, by the way. And all you could see in there was actually a small box with a cross in it. That was actually an attached Flash file containing a zero-day in Adobe Flash. You might wonder why it's possible to embed Adobe Flash objects into Excel. I don't know anybody who uses that at work, but it's possible. So this is all it took. This was the initial attack in the RSA attack phrase. So in this session, we're going to walk through the startup with the initial attack. The next step will be backdooring. When you execute code on some server or client that you compromised after the initial attack, you want to backdoor it. I'm going to demonstrate exactly how the RSA did it, and we're going to talk about the others. After that, when you have compromised one computer, and you have a backdoor in him, then you want to do something called lateral movement. You want to spread. And in the RSA case, they spread manually. But most of the attacks that we're going to talk about, Dooku, Stuxnet, Flame, they will spread automatically from system to compromise resources all over the network. So we will actually demonstrate a worm attack. I'm going to run a worm in my virtual environment. I think I'm going to detach the cable to Microsoft Network before I do it. If not, it's the last day, so I don't care much. So when you've done the backdooring, the lateral movement, you probably want to do data gathering. You want to extract information from every computer that you compromised. I mean, there are two major reasons to do an advanced persistent threat attack. One is steal data. The other one is to perform a task. In the Stuxnet case, they wanted to kill centrifuges in a nuclear power plant. But in Flame, they just wanted to steal data. So there will be something happening. And last but not least, they need exfiltration. If they want to steal data, they want to get the data out of that environment, sent home to them. We're going to talk a little bit on how they do that nowadays. And if in the Stuxnet case, maybe they want a report that says the centrifuges are now broken. Hopefully. That can be more challenging if it's a network that is not connected to the internet. But that can be done too. It takes more energy. So, just for fun, let's do a demo. This is actually an old example. I've done this before, but I think it's very good to make everybody understand how easy this is, how accessible and easy it is to do the initial attack in a similar manner to how RSA did it. I'm not going to do it with a zero-day attack because we're at TechEd. If I bring up an Excel spreadsheet zero-day demo, I don't think I'm going to be invited again. Tried that before. Was away for a while. I'm back now. Some people thought that was funny. I didn't. Anyhow, I'm going to have two machines in this demo. We have one attacker who's sitting on the internet, and he will just send an email to a target. And that's just going to be an Excel spreadsheet, and it's going to open it. All I want to show you is how easy it can be. We're going to talk a little about the implications, what kind of risk you face from this. So the interesting thing in this demo is the target is Windows 7, 64-bit, perfectly patched and updated. It's going to be the Office Windows 7. It's as fine as they come. Firewall on, everything is great. Service Pack 1, all in shape. The attacker is my attacker 01. Doesn't really matter the configuration on the attacker. Yes, you know, it's a Windows 7 too, but this could be anything. Never care about the attacker. I can attack somebody from Windows 98. It's equally dangerous. So the attacker is running something called the Shelly server. He's waiting for connections. He wants somebody to connect to him. He's sitting on the internet. This is just a simple example, but this could be the start of a real APT. And let's see what happens when we open up. The office machine. Do you want me to send an email, or do you understand what that looks like? Yeah, you do. So let's just double-click the worm game. This is actually a worm game. It's Excel spreadsheet that can play the worm. Yeah, I have some geeky colleagues. Bjorn actually did this. I think I'm going to win. Hey, player two wins. You get points here and everything. That's cool, isn't it? Let's look at the other side. I got a command prompt. It doesn't really matter if I shut down Excel. So I'm going to kill it. I don't want to save it. Let's look at the other side. Host name. This is the Office Win 7. If I check my own machine, just to show you that it's different. Host name. I'm the attacker 01. So this is actually a macro thing. And the default behavior Windows 7 or Office 2010, which is actually the application running, if you look here, it's if I change the name, you're going to get back to the default behavior. So worm game 1. It will ask you if you want to enable content. This is the default behavior. So all I did was click enable. And do you think somebody who will take something from the garbage can and open it, do you think is prepared to click this button? Yes. I mean, in every test we do, we get some people doing it. So I think this is actually the easiest attack vector. Macros. But it could as well be 0 days, but not as many people have access to those. But in an advanced persistent threat attack, yes, you will have to count on that. But that's more challenging to countermeasure. But what you can do here is at least you can keep your applications updated, and you should think about macros. Two very simple tricks to improve security in your companies. I have like two different bank customers, they enable macros. I have government agencies, one of them actually thought that they could not have the setting on only signed macros because they thought that if you change the content of the Excel spreadsheet, you have to resign the spreadsheet. They didn't realize you only signed the macros. So you can sign your macros, you can still change your Excel spreadsheet. So if you're one of those people, rethink. You can actually implement security. Anybody wants a warm game, you can come to me later. You can borrow a USB stick from me or something, no problem. Just go get it. I'll be here all day. So, that's demo number one. When thinking about RSA, you might wonder, who else was hit? Were there any other companies than Northrop Grumman and Lockheed Martin? Well, this is a list of the targeted companies that was in the aftermath of the RSA attack. You might recognize some of them. For example, Cisco, IBM, Intel, Motorola, Facebook, Google, Northrop Grumman, Novell, PricewaterhouseCoopers, Seagate, Thomson, and the list goes on. Why am I showing you this? Because you need to realize it doesn't have to be that military contractor. It can be any company that has important or valuable information. Because many of the APTs today are financed by states. And the new war in the world is about money and influence. It's not about killing people. So if you're on this list, you were targeted by the RSA attack. It's kind of an extensive list, isn't it? You don't have to raise your hands if you found your company there. It's completely okay. But I think this is what makes you realize you should take this seriously, don't you? And this is just one example. Well, there are many ways to get that first foothold, to do the initial attack in the process. It's believed that the Stuxnet attack, do you all know about Stuxnet? You probably do. In 2011, the Iranian government, they made an announcement that the Natanz nuclear plant in Bushehr was going to be set up for production. Everything was in order. The same week, everything broke down. Kind of interesting. I think they had 50,000 centrifuges that would enrich uranium. And they broke down. They didn't know why at first. But then after a while, they realized that they have been targeted by the most advanced persistent attack ever. We're going to talk more about that attack. But it's presumed that it was actually initiated by a USB stick. That is not necessarily true at all. Everybody think it started by USB stick for the single reason that it had a very cool exploit that would target Explorer. If you put your USB stick in there, there was an LNK file that would actually made like an auto-start feature, if you will. So if you open up the USB stick, you would get infected by Stuxnet. But Stuxnet has other attack vectors as well. They have project files, Siemens project files, that will infect systems. So if you're on a trade show and you give somebody a CD, USB stick, or a drive, or send them an email containing these files, if they executed that file, they would be infected by Stuxnet. If somebody at the trade show got a hard drive, they could be infected. If they connected their computer on a hotel, they could be infected, and then they brought it home to that nuclear power plant. So it's not necessarily so. It has to be the USB stick that started it. It probably was, but we don't know. In the RSA case, it was VPN, probably. Since Northrop Grumman and those companies are military, when they were attacked, they were probably using VPN, using the RSA token data to get in there, but that's not officially announced. But that's a good assumption to make. Why else would they steal the RSA tokens? It was probably some way to use them, right? VPN is a very popular target for RSA dongles. Other things. I'm going to give you an example of a SQL injection. Why? Because I think people think they belong to the past. People don't do SQL injections anymore. When we do penetration testing on external networks, we almost always find at least one server that is still valid to vulnerable SQL injections. I'm going to give you a little special example of a SQL injection. What's special about it is that it's not going to be so obvious. And I'm not going to teach you SQL injections. That's not the purpose. I'm just going to show you how what it looks like. So in this demo, I have two computers. I have the attacker sitting on the web. This guy over here, he's going to target some kind of web infrastructure, and there will probably be a back-end SQL server. So what I'm really targeting is the SQL server, but I'm doing it through the web interface. So I'm not going to talk so much about how you can detect the SQL injection, how you can do the reconnaissance on the web server. I'm just going to run it to show you what it looks like. So I have two machines in this demo. I have the attacker, which is my Windows 7 attacker. And I'm targeting a Windows 2008 server, just so you know. It's not an old, lame server. And this is going to be my injection. Is it obvious? How many can say what this does? If you can see it, you can apply for a job at TruSec. So it wasn't fun. You don't want to work here. Okay, sorry. This is not so difficult if you really look at it. I mean, if somebody is a brainiac, you probably need 30 seconds. You can figure it out. But I'm going to copy this. And I'm actually going to run it right off the notepad here. So I'm going to my attacker. Attacker 01. I'm going to exit this one. No, that's not it. It's going to be the attacker Windows 7. I have so many different attackers. This is the fake Swedish bank. It doesn't look like... Don't they have a nice logo, though? So we're going to do some login. This is username and password field. I mean, the thing about SQL injections, you need to find some place where they accept user input, one way or the other. This is the obvious one, but it could be very obscure. We attack web service interfaces, anything where you accept input from the user to the web application, or from the client application to the server application. Anywhere where you can send data to the server, that's where you attack. So I'm actually going to paste this. And before I do it, we're going to look at on the other side. This is the whole strange string. And on the other side, we have the SQL server. And this is the temp folder of the SQL server. Can you see on top there is no exe file there? Okay. Let's go back to the other side. Log on. Wait some time. Now it's done. Let's go look on the other side again. And there is now a remote shell there. I wouldn't name it remote shell normally. And so this SQL injection, it downloaded an exe file through a SQL injection directly. And you might wonder what if that would be easy to detect, right? Would your IDS detect this? So one question to ask yourself is, would they detect this? Just think about it. Would it or wouldn't it? I don't think it would. There is no XPCMD shell or nothing real special, but this is what you will get in your logs. Might look suspicious, but maybe you are doing some things that involves different kinds of encoding, stuff like that. So the other thing is, what did the file look like that I downloaded? So let's look at the file. And this is actually the real file that I downloaded, the remote shell.exe. I'm going to go to my web server that I downloaded, because what the command did was it downloaded the file from a web server. So this is the... where is my INET pub? Am I blind? See. Is this the wrong computer? Yes, I'm supposed to be at the attacker. This is why I have friends. You help me. Thank you. I'm getting old. I'm 41. Yeah, I shouldn't admit that. Well, the thing is that this is the remote shell file that they downloaded. This is the .exe file. Do you think the firewall will detect this? It's just the ASCII representation of each and every character in the file. So it doesn't necessarily have to be binary. So I'm actually using, and this is just an example to make you understand how advanced the attacks are, because this is not the best we can do, but this is something that you can comprehend. This is what it says. It's actually, it declares some variables. That's just to make it obscure. Then it does exec xpcmd shell, and it says run PowerShell encode command. And this is an encoded PowerShell command that says take that text file and decode it back to binary. So you don't need to remember this, but you should remember that I'm using PowerShell because it's powerful. That's why the power is in PowerShell, if you didn't know that. And I can use PowerShell built-in encoding to encode stuff. And with PowerShell, I have access to the entire .NET framework. You can actually run shell code from PowerShell without compiling anything. There are proof of concepts on the web for that. So now I have a shell on the computer. I should maybe execute it, right? So I'm going to execute my remote shell using this string, which does the same. But this is just starting that file. So copy. And before I do that, I'm going to go back to my attacker. And I'm going to start just a netcat listener. I'm going to use the old-fashioned netcat. That's all I need, because I'm running it off my attack machine, so it doesn't really matter if it's detected by antivirus or anything. This is my own machine. And then I'm going to run it. And if it works, you can see that there's going to be a command line up there. There you go. But this is not a normal remote shell. This is a PowerShell remote shell. That's kind of cool, because I love PowerShell. So now we can do like get help, you know, get command. Isn't that kind of cool? A PowerShell remote shell. So now I don't need all the hacking tools, because I can do everything in PowerShell. So I can hack that network from a computer using PowerShell. I take it US last week. I did a session on how to do penetration testing. We actually did a whole session, just PowerShell. Just to show you what you can do with PowerShell. It's probably recorded, so you can get it online if you're interested. The reason I show you this is because I'm going to get back to this later. I'm going to use the SQL injection to start a worm in that target environment. And if you still don't believe, it could be fun to see. This is actually the string, the last string. This is what it really does. So this is what it says. Execute xpcmd shell, the stored procedure in SQL, and run the PowerShell command, start process, and register and run that. So, but this you would probably react when you see it in the firewall logs, right, or the web logs. This you probably wouldn't. So the lesson learned from this is not about SQL injection, it's about the fact that whenever somebody do a real more advanced attack, they're going to try to make it obscure. So you can't just look for the obvious. That is what you should take home from this demo. SQL horror, this is just another example of the fact. I want you to believe in the fact that people don't think about SQL security. I'm going to do this Google link here. I'm going to fire up my real browser, run it. So this is just an example. phpMyAdmin is an admin interface for SQL, MySQL. So if you look at this, here you can run your SQL statements right from the internet. You can manage the SQL servers, do file uploads and everything. And it's kind of strange, because I did show this last week in TechEd, and there's still so many examples that works. That one don't work. Or does it? I think that's the only one that doesn't work. I mean, they all work. You can run SQL injects on their databases. And this is just one example out of many. And the reason I show you, these guys saw the session. You don't want to be on that list. It's a wall of shame. That guy's over too. But still, there are so many. So you don't even have to do SQL injection. They have a SQL interface for you. This might sound funny, but I was called into a gaming company some time back, an online gaming company, and they have a large turnover. We're talking millions of dollars, millions and millions and more than that. And they actually had, they were growing so rapidly, and their affiliates, the one who purchased the platform from them and sold it in their own domains, if you will, but because they were building the engine, they had all this customization. They wanted this kind of report and that kind of report. So what they did was they just made an interface like this. So you can make your own reports. Here you go. Just run through the database, SQL. And they had 3,000 affiliates. And all it took, if you want to become an affiliate, you could become one online. So one day, a lot of money went away. Somebody started changing the databases. Because they had a global database, every affiliate could access everything. So sometimes you don't even have to hack them. They give you the access. And you should think about that. Another thing I see a lot is, I see old web servers that should have been decommissioned that the companies don't even know they have, but they're still on the DMZ. So out-of-bound servers are a real big problem. They are great starting points for an APT or for a targeted attack in general. So you should do inventory. That's the lesson to take home. But this was just to show you that SQL injections, they actually exist. I mean, if the obvious exists, then probably the more obscure still exists too, right? People are usually smiling more in my sessions. You look kind of sad. I don't know why. This is some statistics, yes, you know, because we're still talking about the initial attack. These are a comparison of how the targeting method was in, for example, when they hacked the Oak Ridge National Laboratory, Department of Defense, when they hacked those, the Stuxnet attack, the attack on Google, the Aurora, the Canadian government, Australian government, the RSA attack, Lockheed Martin, all of those. As you can see, most of them starting with an email. So that's a good lesson to learn. You can actually hack governments using an email as a start. Another interesting thing is, if you suspect that they're not really connected to the internet, USB drives are a good way to go. If you're really advanced and they don't have so many obvious exposures, you might go for VPNs and stuff. You might have to hack RSA or something first, but you can still hack them, obviously. Because at least Lockheed Martin admitted that they were attacked. But they didn't admit that they stole any data. I don't think you would like to do that if you're a military contractor. But most of these companies get data stolen from them, and they had to admit it, because it was obvious. In my country, in Sweden, it's kind of sad because we don't have a law that forces you to report an intrusion. So we don't know how many companies get caught. I do see a lot at my work. But whenever I'm involved with a US customer and they are attacked, they're going to have to publish it. Otherwise, the CEO will go to jail. It's in the legal system. They have to show it. They have to be honest. And they usually are. And I think that's a good thing, actually. If we look at the process again, the next step will be backdooring. So let's go back to RSA and see how they did. I'm a little bit proud here because they actually used a Swedish backdoor. They used the poison ivy. And what's strange about it is it's an old tool that's been around for years. And you might wonder, no matter who did it, I mean, the RSA attack was pretty advanced. Why would they use poison ivy? And shouldn't poison ivy be detected by antivirus? So my next demo will be to show you poison ivy and show you how easy I can change it, transform it, so it will never be detected by any antivirus. And I'm going to use a tool that took us 5 hours to build at the office. One guy, 5 hours. And it's a global tool, so you can use it to make any binary undetected. And I think that is an awareness thing. You should know this. Especially when you are renewing your antivirus subscription next time. So, in this demo, first of all, I'm just going to show you Poison Ivy, what it looks like. I'm going to run this off an XP because, to be honest, the platform only supports XP. Or this version of Poison Ivy, the admin interface, if you will. But it doesn't matter. You can be admin on any computer. It will still be able to attack most others. So this is the Poison Ivy. And to show you the features of it, I need to create a new server. In the Trojan world, it's vice versa. The server is what you install on the target because you want to remote administer the server. So it's kind of vice versa. You're sitting on the client, remoting all your servers in your botnet, if you will. So it kind of gets confusing. So I'm going to create a new server where I can actually open up an old profile if I want to. I can show you how it what it looks like. Yeah, let's do this one. Load profile. You can configure connections. I'm just going to configure so that it phones home to me, but that can be any IP of another computer. So we'll phone home to the computer you name here. You can make it connect through proxies. You can hijack the proxy. You can put passwords in there. You can make it meltdown install so it disappears after it's executed. You can make it install itself into the system folder or somewhere else. You can install it beyond other files using alternate data streams. You can make it survive restart using ActiveX components, and this is an old one. So these are the advanced things. I have a process mutex here that says TrueSec. If you write TrueSec, no antivirus will detect it. That's a joke. That's not true. But it did work. But you can actually you make your version of this server unique by putting a mutex in. You can inject this, so it lives within the browser process. So it uses process injection. You can run keyloggers in it. You can change the format of the file to make it more difficult to detect an antivirus. But I'm just going to generate this. So I'm going to build it and name it remote.exe, save. So now we have a file here that says remote, which was made right this moment, 9:13. So if I execute it, you will see things happening. I'm just going to double click, and I'm going to go back to this. I'm going to click OK. This is the admin interface. I'm going to start it just locally. It doesn't matter. There's a new connection. Wow. I can double click it. This is what I can do with the target sitting on the internet. I can list all the processes. I can get a remote shell. Get all the devices. I mean, I can do whatever I want to. I can steal the hashes. I can run a screen capture. It's kind of nice. Kind of stupid when you do it on yourself. It gets kind of mirrored. So let's not do that anymore. Webcam capture, if you want to see who's running the show. It has a plug-in model, so I actually I installed the plug-in remote port scanner, but I can make any plug-in I want to, just download them from the web. It's kind of an advanced tool, isn't it? Of course, I can steal all the files from the file system. Go to files. This is the file system. I can download and upload files as much as I like to. So if I want to download and upload, I'm just going to be able to do that. So, yeah, download, upload. Execute them. Hidden or normal. So you can imagine why the RSA hackers wanted to use this one, right? It's kind of competent, isn't it? So let's take this remote.exe. I'm going to copy it. I'm going to put it on my real computer, and I'm not going to double-click it, hopefully, because that would be kind of lame to infect myself. And then I'm going to go to VirusTotal. Do you know what this is? This is a scanner engine, so I'm going to choose file here. I'm going to go to the desktop and take this remote.exe and see if it gets detected by all the known popular antivirus vendors. And I did this morning, but let's do reanalyze. So let's do a real analysis of the remote.exe here. And this is the detection ratio. 1 out of 1. I mean, you expect poison ivy to be detected. So this is not something that would surprise you really. I mean, it's kind of strange though, they all use different names on it. Some people actually call it poison something, but everybody wants to be unique. So no, this is not poison, this is inject HC200. This is Trojan Asian gem frauder. But as you can see, most will detect it. So while this is running, let's hide it using the AV hider. So all I'm going to do is I'm going to copy this remote.exe just to my demo folder because I want to run things in my demo folder on my real computer. So demo, AV hide. This is old. I'm going to take this away because I tried it this morning. So make sure the demo would run fine. Go back to the, I'm going to see the status here, 38 out of 40. 38 out of 41. I mean, if you ever again want to pay for an antivirus, please don't buy Anti2 AVL or Byte Hero or eSafe. It's not that safe. They failed the easiest test in the book. But this is the result of a known virus. This is good. All good. Let's go back. 40 out of 42. That's the detection ratio. Let's run my tool. And I'm going to run the AVHide tool. And I'm going to... It takes two parameters. The first one is the .exe file you want to change. And the other one would be the output, the new file. So this would be remote 2 or something. And if you look at the result, there would be remote 2 there. So let's see what happens in Virus Total when we upload this. And there is no perfect science, so if somebody at Virus Total is sitting in the audience working his laptop right now... Somebody might detect it, but I don't think so, to be honest. Scan it. It's uploading. I'm going to reanalyze it just to prove to you that this is true. You think this is interesting? Yes or no? Good. Otherwise, you went up for nothing, right? And it is kind of early still. Detection ratio, 0 out of 0. That's good so far, but out of 0, everything is good. So let's see what the end result will be. It's not usually this slow. I think it's because of the network in here, but it's starting. 0 out of 2. 0 out of 5. 0 out of 7. 0 out of 10. You want this tool? No, you don't need it. You're an honest person, right? Why would you want it? Knowledge is power, right? What it does, it's actually, I'm not going to be too detailed, but it's changing the execution flow of the application. It remaps everything in the binary. So it will just push it around, but it will still make links so that it can still do what it did. But 0 out of 42. It's completely undetected from any antivirus. This is all it takes. 5 hours of work from a security professional and you have your unique antivirus circumvention tool. This is awareness, my friends. This is something you should be aware of. Whatever they say in the marketing campaigns, this is the fact. Antivirus will never protect you from the targeted attack. They will protect you from their spam filters. they might do a great job at spam filtering, but they are spam filters by definition. They take away all the knowns. Most of them take away all the knowns. Some of them can't even do that. So this is the result. Zero. Zero nothing. You want to see if it works? Or don't you have to see? You believe me that much, right? I have to show it, right? It would be nice to get away, because I'm always a little bit nervous, you know. I'm going to uninstall the old one. I'm going to put the new one here, that is remote 2. Double-click it. Connection from. Still works fine. Same thing. Works as before. Equally good. Completely undetected. And this is why the RSA attack could use poison ivy. Easy enough. Why build our own? It's got all the features we need. Let's use it. They have their own AV hider. They don't even need to have source code and change it. That's actually more difficult because it will be more time consuming. This is faster, easier, simpler. 5 hours of consultancy would be like, I don't know what, $1,000. Then you have your own tool. Kind of scary. We charge more though. So, let's go down and uninstall this. Don't want it lying around. Back to the presentation. Yeah, I did this as a reference. It's in the just in the papers to remind you. Well, it's kind of interesting also when you look at the other backdoors. For example, Flamr. If you never heard about Flamr, it's because it was detected very recently. It's another APT malware that has been around for at least 2 years. It doesn't really resemble Stuxnet or Dooku. Some people claim that there are similarities that makes them believe that it's the same authors. But they are different enough so that it could be somebody else, but they had maybe had some kind of interaction somehow or had some intelligence from the other party. But when you read the papers, they say, well, Flamr had keylogging, Flamr had screen dumping, Flamr had, they could listen to audio. I mean, back Orifice and Netbus back in year 1999 had that already. And showing you the poison ivy, it's not that new. It's been around. You can be attacked by this today, and you wouldn't notice because it can be completely undetected from antivirus. But what was new in the Flamr case was some of the propagation things. And we're going to talk about in lateral movement, next part of the phase, but they did some nice things. They really did. For example, they could connect to Bluetooth devices. It would check your Bluetooth driver and see if you were connected to a phone. If you were connected to a phone, they could take your contacts on the phone. Because it was like a surveillance APT, so it was pretty advanced in those ways. So we did more. But most of the features are recognized from before. There's a big difference between the old ones and Flamr and Stuxnet is the quality of the code. They are structured. They are modular. I mean, they are professionally programmed. You can see that even if it was a team involved, it's going to be very unified in the way it was programmed. Next step of the phase, lateral movement. So when you attack your first machine, if we go back to the process, you do lateral movement. You want to expand your influence over the network, like these arrows here. Doom, doom. So how can you do that? How did Stuxnet spread, for example? Well, if Stuxnet started with an LNK file, it had many different ways to spread across the network, from computer to computer. It used LNK vulnerability, as I said before, but that was not only used to get on the first computer, it could work vice versa. If it found a USB stick inside a computer, it could copy itself into the USB stick, so if somebody brings it somewhere else, it could actually get out, get into another network. And they think it's by accident that Stuxnet actually spread to places outside the Natanz nuclear power plant, because it was detected in other parts of Asia and other places. Even though it was programmed only to execute when you were in the Iranian time zone. Otherwise it was supposed to not to execute. So it was pretty intelligent. That makes you believe that somebody wanted to attack something in Iran. How it spread over the network? It was spreading over network shares using weak passwords. It's kind of interesting. Most of the viruses that spreads on internal networks are successful because they do brute force on the administrator account. They are still weak enough to make it the most successful attack vector. Local admin passwords on computers. So we can talk about all these new cool attacks, but the old ones are still valid. We need to think about that. They had a zero-day principle of vulnerability. They had an old one, because they had the configure vulnerability. That was not a zero-day. They had a server-server vulnerability. This is actually the server-server vulnerability. No, it's not. Yeah, they had the server-server vulnerability. They had the default password that was hard-coded to get to the WinCC servers. That was special servers from Siemens, the Siemens company, to get to the computers that were actually running or administering and monitoring the centrifuges, the industrial systems. Some people refer to them as SCADA. They were spreading using Step 7 project files, the Siemens WinCC SIMATIC Step 7. So they actually had infected project files. So if you opened up the project within that application, you would get infected. So that's another attack vector. Somebody sent you a project file in the mail, and you brought it to the infrastructure, and you fired up. That could be the start of Stuxnet. Just a fact. They had two local zero-day exploits. Privilege escalation via the keyboard layout file, privilege escalation via the task scheduler. My colleague Hassan, he reproduced the task scheduler exploit without having read exactly what it did. It was pretty simple. They were using a weak mechanism to verify that a new task was actually made by Windows. So you could actually, because they hashed the file and they checked if the hash was correct, then it must have been valid. So he came up with a way of doing hash collisions, the same technique that they used to produce a zero-day, because the hashing mechanism were weak. So even though you were not an admin, you could create your own task, change it a little bit so it had the same hash as would be valid, and then you could run it as a task. Let's put the file in the right place and it would run. You would just pad the file with more info until it looked the same. So they had spreading techniques, and they also had local privilege escalation. So if you only became user as opposed to admin, that's why you had to have the local exploits. You could get down to the admin credential layer in the systems. See, and then continue spreading from there. This is the real attack vector discussion regarding Stuxnet. This is just here for your reference. Even though they were not connected to the internet, even though the systems were far away down in the infrastructure, it doesn't matter. If you attack this computer, and this one can connect to this one, this one can connect to this one, this one can connect to this one, and this one has access to this one, there is still a risk. And this is basically what it probably looked like in the Stuxnet case. Because you might think, oh, we can do segmentation after segmentation, but if this one is vulnerable and it has full access to that one because this is a management station, then you're still dead. So you can enforce segmentation, but you need to have security too. This is actually the centrifuges in Natanz. This is what they look like. Automatic spreading demo. This is just for fun. I'm going to show you one of the classroom worms we have in the lab. TrueSec, this is for school, for teaching people how to make worms. Well, that's what you learn in a cyber range environment, stuff like that. This one is made in .NET. Normally, no real viruses are made in .NET because it's so easy to decompile. I wouldn't say it's a bad idea, though. .NET binaries are not that feared because nobody ever uses them. So if you make a .NET binary, they won't think it's going to be a virus. This one consists of some different parts. We're not going to have, it's not going to be a programming session, but it's the command and control center, the TAD CC, TrueSec Attack Demo CC. It's a TAD in spread infection and the TAD Trojan itself. So this is the Trojan, this is the spreading mechanism, and this is the control center. You can configure some things. I'm going to show you an example of that. You can say, for example, I only want to attack these subnets or this subnet. So functions like this are pretty common in Trojans, that they can actually restrict. If it's a targeted attack, they might say, I only want to attack this network, nothing else. So it should just not execute if it's on a different IP. And they can use different things for that. In Stuxnet, they did time zones, for example. If you don't want to attack yourself, you can do explicits. Don't attack the one that's already my own, that's my own box. And you can have different propagation methods. I took away some of the propagation methods in this one because of where we are. If you look at the application itself, it has, it's just going to brute force passwords, but there might be other functions. It could be zero-day attacks, stuff like that. So they're commented out. But they are very modular. So let's run it and see if it works. And look at it. And we're going to talk about some of the applications to that. So I'm going to go to the attacker, attacker 01. And no, I don't want to go to attacker 01. I want to go to another machine. This is wrong. I want to go to attacker Win 7. And I'm going to download the TAD spread infection files using the same technique. It's not going to be that obscure because I didn't have time to fix that for the, from the demo. But I'm actually going to run it off this one. So I'm going to download some files. It's kind of interesting, just the technique here. I'm doing it through a SQL injection. So when I'm used to this, this is nothing special. This is a perfect example of how the attack could be done. And if you look at the other side now, I have two new files on the SQL server. TAD spread infection and TAD spread infection config file. So I can put poison ivy in there, whatever I want to. And before we execute it, we're going to take a look at some things. We're going to start the monitoring platform, the command and control center on my Win 7 attacker. So I'm going to fire up that one. This is the control center. Hopefully this demo works. I didn't try it because if I tried it, I would have infected all my computers and it would have taken me forever to get rid of them. Because it's kind of interesting, this attack, because when you attack one computer, it's going to be infected and it's going to start spreading again. So if you disinfect one, somebody else is going to infect him again. So you have to like pause one, all the machines but one, disinfect him, take somebody else up, pause this one. Because when I try to get rid of it, it just infected over and over and over again. So when you let it rip, it's kind of difficult. But that's a good representation of the problem in the real world too. So what I'm going to do before I start is I'm going to fire up Wireshark. We're going to look at the what's happening on the network. So capture interfaces. It's capturing. Good. We get traffic. And now I'm going to execute. Let's hope this works. Copy. And I will get feedback very shortly. I will get feedback in this interface if it starts. And I will get feedback in the Wireshark application. So I'm going to log on. And as you can see, one computer is infected. And what you can see here, if you start looking, is that I don't have so many targets in this network, so it's not going to be too many successful attacks. But you will see, it's probing for, let's wait a minute, it's probing for computer number 7. Let's see, ARP. Yeah, who has number 8? Who has number 9? Who has number 10? Attack, the yellow is an attack. Who has number 11? Who has number 12? Who has number 13? So it's just probing the network for computer after computer. And whenever he finds somebody that is vulnerable, he's going to run the infection on him, and that one will be infected too, and he will start to infect others. So this is how it works. And what's interesting to understand here is that timing is very important. When they do this in an APT, they have time, so they can go low and slow. They're not going to be so aggressive, so you will see this. They will do one IP, wait 5 minutes, do another one. Maybe they're not going to do it one by one, they're just going to do random. You don't know. So you need to understand this. But sooner or later, you're probably going to get some more here. It's just going to do the whole subnet. Yeah, one more. The WinXP is hacked. So now I can get, for example, the CMD console. Boom. There you go, host name. Yeah, that's the WinXP. So this is what they look like. And we teach people in class how to put extra features into this, how to make it SSL instead of HTTP, how to do this and that, you know, so that they can understand the problem. It's very simple. Ah, another one is hacked. It's kind of funny when you look at the ARP now, because now one is starting from beginning. Who is number 3? Who is number 5? Who is number 6? But the first one is up on number 64. 43, 45. Now they're all hacking each other. So this is what it looks like. Well, I'm going to let this run. It's going to infect and kill my entire network, but it doesn't matter because I need to continue. In the Flame attack, they didn't have a lot of Seerdays and stuff as they did Stuxnet. So you might wonder, why do they consider that one a very special and advanced attack? Well, they had something else. They understood infrastructure. They understood that computers will, from time to time, probe for WPAD files, for example. If you look at the Wireshark here, even though I didn't really prepare for it, I will most likely see, let's go to the other machine, Win7 attacker. Where is my Wireshark? There it is. If I go back here, I can probably find, yeah, I saw one. I don't even want to, it doesn't matter, but I thought I saw one that was pretty simple to find. I'm not going to do a lot of parsing and browsing, but it will query occasionally for WPFAD, and the reason it does that is because you have an internet setting in an option connections. If you have LAN settings, automatic proxy detection, then it will query for WPAD files. So if you have an infrastructure that will do proxy redirection as they do in hotels, for example, if you don't have this clicked in, you will not be able to do browsing. So this is why you're looking for that file. What the file does, it's going to give you information on where the proxy is. So in the Flamer case, anybody on the network that would ask for a proxy, Flamer would tell him, well, you should not connect to, you should connect to me. So if you were infected, you would be proxified by Flamer. And if you asked for some particular DNS names, the WPAD would tell you, this is actually the WPAD file from Flamer, it will tell you, if you're looking for Windows Update, you should not go to Windows Update. You should go to my local web server. If you're looking for this Windows Update, that Windows Update, these are actually MD5 representations of those, of these names, then it would make you go to himself, to the web service here, and it would download CAB files. What was interesting about them is that you would get updates that were rogue. They would have the right names, and they would be signed by Microsoft. So they would just be downloaded and executed. So it was not a Sierday. What was it? They had found a hash collision mechanism in the Microsoft Terminal Server licensing certificates, because they had some weak algorithms. So they could actually reproduce a signing certificate that could sign code in the name of Microsoft. They didn't steal the certificate. They could make a duplicate of the code signing certificate. It's revoked now. But they had, not a zero day, something better. If they were on the same network as any Windows computer that wanted to do updates, they would update him. And it would be valid. That's actually pretty scary. So I'm going to do a demo. It's not going to do the same thing, but it's going to be equally evil. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do something something that has the same thing. It does the WPAD attack, but it will wait for somebody to download any binary from the web that is valid. I'm not going to do patches, because this one, this is not in patching. You cannot patch this problem. I'm just going to inject code into the binary. So even though you're downloading a valid file, I will put my Trojan inside that file on the fly. So two machines involved here, three actually. Some server on the internet, a valid server, a Microsoft server, the attacker and a client. The client will be VPAD attacked, so he will use me as a proxy. I will forward traffic to download the right file, but when the traffic comes in return, he will see if it's a binary. If it is a binary, I will patch it and he will get the patched binary. Kind of messy, I understand, but let's look at this. This is the attacker, he's red. This is the nasty, this is the proxy. And this is just a netcat. So let's go do some browsing from the target. I'm just going to use the WinXP. This could as well be Windows 7. This has nothing to do with what computer operating system it is. But he is set up to be targeted by this attack. So he will go to LiveSys internals. You know I love Mark Rusinovich, right? I told you in the beginning of the session. So we do go to MSN here, and we can see on the SS machine that it's starting to look at traffic. It's inspecting traffic. So once again, when we go to the XP, we go to livesysinternals.com. We download one of the cool tools. Should we do BG Info Process Explorer? Which one? BG Info Process Explorer. Process Explorer, yeah. How many downloaded Process Explorer after Mark's session yesterday? Hands up. I hope this one wasn't running. Because then I owe you. Own you. So let's download it. Save. Save. And as Mark said in his session, this binary is actually signed, so you could verify it. But most binaries on the web still aren't signed. So this is the behavior. This is the recently downloaded Process Explorer properties. I downloaded this just this moment. We have 2 minutes left of the sessions. Is it okay if I do 5 extra minutes? How many would think that would be okay? Almost everybody. Great. So, I'm going to fire this one up. This is Process Explorer. This is unknown publisher. This is all it says in XP, but this is because he has a signed certificate. If he didn't, it would be an unknown. So I'm going to run it. And it works, right? It's Process Explorer. It's also Trojanized, but this is because we want people to find the TAD Trojan. That's not, it's a good tool. So, let's look at the other side. On the... which one was it? Yeah, it was assess. There you go. A command prompt, host name. This is the WinXP. Who am I, really? Host name. Assess 01. So this is somebody else. I injected a remote shell payload into Slack space in the binary. So whenever somebody downloads a binary, he will look, is there some area in there where there are zeros? Where I can put my shell code in it. If it's enough space, it will just put shell code in it, relink, so it will execute shell code first, and then start the real binary. That's nasty, isn't it? So that's actually, I would say, almost as good. Not as good, but almost as good as the other attack. And this one you can't patch, really. You can just verify what you download, or you can have good processes of what to execute on your computers. That's how you can protect yourself from that. I'm going to round this up. Data gathering. All I need you to understand is that whenever they've done these attacks and they compromised a lot of machines, they will steal data. In Flamer, they stole everything. They actually focused on AutoCAD files and stuff like that because they wanted drawings of buildings. They wanted IP, intellectual property, anything that has had value from all kinds of angles. So they propagated, they stole data. In Stuxnet, they killed centrifuges, but there will be a task or some data in the process. Last but not least, they will exfiltrate. They will need to find a way to get the data out. This is the most interesting new technique that you should be aware of. Back in the days, they had a list of like 50 domains, and they rotated. So if they wanted to phone home, they would look in the Trojan list, and they would say, okay, today I'm going to contact this server that is named football.org. Nowadays, they're doing something they call domain-generating algorithms, a.k.a. domain fluxing. This means they will have an algorithm based on time, computer information, and a seed, so they will know at that particular minute, they will know that I should go to this server. And what's good about it from the attack perspective is that most of these servers are sleeping, but for 10 hours on a particular day, the command server will be here. So you cannot have, you can never really track all the command and control centers. There will always be a new one. It will just move all the time. That's really a challenge. So you should be aware that this is around. And, you know, it's very easy to purchase a domain name. It's very easy to host things. In the future, they will use Microsoft Azure. Laugh all you want, but it's not that scary if you say, oh, we had a lot of traffic going to Microsoft Azure. But malware vendors, APT, initiators, they can use those services too. Not everything comes from China or Russia just because that's what the other people say. The most evil traffic can come from somebody that looks very, very familiar. Countermeasures. This is more as a reference. If you download this documentation, I have two different solutions. One is the ultimate. It's like rearrange your networks according to my baseline here. The other one is best effort. If you're not going to do that, just do all the normal things. Please enforce strong password, patch your stuff and so. This is for your reference. You can do a lot of reading on this. There's actually some reading links here about the different APTs I mentioned, but also some good reading on Microsoft resources and others where you can find information on how you can do countermeasures. Unfortunately, in 75 minutes, you can't do everything. But it's here for the taking. It's on my blog. So you can go to truesecure.se if you want all this. I have two things I want to say before you all leave. It's very valuable for me if you fill out the evals. If you do, if you like the session, fill out the evals, well, then I might have 2, 3, 4, 5 sessions next year. If you didn't like it, don't fill it out. And last but not least, thank you so much for listening and coming in this morning. Thank you very much.